Hello and welcome back to the Comic Lyra podcast, the podcast that does deep dives into the best worst of midifs. I've fucked up already. Should we keep going?
Keep going.
Yeah, let's keep going. Because we're true and real podcasters who don't edit out bits ever.
Never.
Never. We're 100% honest and upfront, and I don't even know how to edit. So
no, this is just exactly what we say is exactly what ends up on the podcast.
And we've also never lied on the podcast either.
Never lied on the podcast.
But if we did lie, you wouldn't know it anyway. So we could just say we never lied.
But the people who control the white room would know that we'd lied, and then we'd get shocked, and then we'd get shocked until we told the truth.
I don't think we're going to get shocked and reset the podcast. The best, worst, and middest of comic books, graphic novels, and sometimes mangas. I'm your host, the soon-to-be-known as Comic Stan, and with me, as always, is my morally ambiguous co-host, is Jamie.
Yo, dude. It's almost as though we last did this like 3 days ago, Ryan.
I don't remember how long ago any recording was. But I don't want to get into why that is the case, because again, we might get shocked and reset the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. So we just need to carry on with today if it's a normal...
Just a barrel on regardless of moral questions.
Carry on regardless.
Yeah. And I was going to try and link that to the comic of this week, which is our monthly, once a month, mandatory non-superhero comic book, which is this week, the comic book New Burn.
Yeah, which is cool.
And as picked out especially...
Podcast over.
That's our review. Picked out especially because it was recommended by another source I won't mention because it's another podcast, and why would we want to give the competitors, you know, any kind of airtime?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, I mean, dare they steal from our single digits audience to add to their probably millions?
Let's not talk about how many people there are or aren't listening. It's certainly not single digits.
But if you are... No, that was a joke for... That was emphasized for... Exaggerated for comedic effect. But if you are listening, thank you, all nine of you. So as I said, it was recommended, and it's also by a podcast favorite writer, one Chip Zdarsky.
Yep.
Who I've read a lot of Daredevil of and been a really big fan of that.
Yeah, and we liked...
Public Domain.
Yeah, we liked Public Domain, didn't we?
Exactly. And also art by Jacob Phillips.
Yeah.
And these are two, like, image... It's an Image comic, so that's a certain guaranteed level of, like, at least interesting, isn't it?
And these are, like, two Image dab hands, aren't they?
Oh, 100%. I mean, Chip Zdarsky, I think, was one of the... Might have been one of the original people to, like, start it, or I've probably got that wrong. I've probably mixed him up with someone else. If you would think I would know all the history of Image... I know Todd McFarlane was a part of it, and that guy, the guy who created Deadpool, I can't remember his name, but he's the guy.
You're talking about it as if I'm going to know.
Yeah, that's probably speaking to the wrong crowd.
What if I just did? What if I just knew?
You might have. We've talked about him before, so it's not like you don't have the
it's
information.
It's entirely possible.
Rob Liefeld. That's what I was trying to think.
Rob Liefeld, known for being bad a lot of the time, right?
Well, he's that famous. He was the artist by the famous Captain America with the chest put like shifted out of his body kind of thing. So, yeah, he was an Image guy as well. But regardless of enough about the publisher, let's talk about the comic, because that's what the people are here for. All nine of them.
All nine of them are here just to hear about the comic.
Yeah.
Won't do a running joke about us being in a white room. Will do a running gag.
What joke?
Yeah, this is true. It's not a gag, is it?
That's the point.
It's just the reality of our situation. What did you think of it?
I thought it was really good. I breezed through it naturally, even though I say something's good, I've still got my nitpicks and and more like discussions. I've got things that I want to discuss rather than being like, this is bad because of this. I'm like, I want to know what your thoughts are about certain aspects of it.
Yeah.
But overall, breezed through it very quickly and was not bored at any point. If anything, the fact that I have nitpicks is because I was engaged in it. And I haven't got anything like with previous titles where I've been like, this was bad and it took me out of it. Like, I was always engaged in the story. So I think that's the best you can say about a title, really, without calling it perfect. What about yourself?
Well, I found the premise a bit labored.
I can see that.
The premise was a bit heavy handed, but I like what they did with it. I think there were moments where the story wasn't particularly well told, particularly the transition between like issue 4 and 5.
Yeah.
Or maybe 3 or 4. There's a big plot point that isn't really explained, and then suddenly you're kind of playing catch up, and that's totally fine. I'm glad that I didn't get a constant fucking narration.
Yeah.
Of the interior monologue, or getting a narration from another character who's narrating the story to me via speech bubbles.
Which is interesting, because this is a very noir-esque story presented in that way, I thought. And normally noir is very inner monologue heavy as a
as a genre.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I didn't really get a lot of the noir influence. Like, it's certainly a type of story that could have been noir. Mm. Like, we're talking about mobsters, we're talking about gangs.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel that much like a noir thing.
I got the most noir stuff from the whole, like, oh yeah, he's got a past, but he won't talk about it. Like, you're a detective or a policeman, that's very noir-esque.
Yeah, I suppose we are talking about a hard-boiled ex-cop. Who doesn't play by the rules. He plays by his own rules.
Yeah. He's a loose cannon, but he gets results.
Because he does play by a set of rules, but they're his rules.
And a man's got to have a code.
And a man has to have a code, and he has one. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, okay. I'll acknowledge that.
And speaking of the premise, do you want to tell the people what the premise is of the story?
Yeah, so the premise is this dude, Newburn, used to be a quap.
I'm not a quap.
I knew you were a quap.
Are you a quap? stealing other jokes.
Yeah, for anyone who doesn't know, that's a reference to How I Met Your Mother. No, that's a reference to The Departed via How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah, it's a reference of a reference.
Yeah, that's bad.
And then hopefully if someone references us doing it here, that'll be four layers deep references.
So he's a hard-boiled ex-cop.
I thought he's a hard-boiled egg.
He's a hard-boiled egg who used to work for the egg police in New York Egg.
Yep.
And now
in New York City. What We Do in the Shadows. It's another reference. Go on.
The baddest man in New York City. What's his name?
Matt Berry.
Matt Berry. What a man. What a man. So this dude used to be a cop, isn't a cop anymore, now works for the mobs as like essentially their impartial investigator
the sheriff of the mobs.
Yeah, so essentially when one of them commits a crime against any of the others, he goes in to investigate it, and that's his job, and it's agreed by all the mobs that he's allowed to do that, and it essentially prevents them from having gang wars, which is bad for business.
Yes.
So the really high level gangsters don't buy into the, you know, like, oh, you did this on our turf, so I'm going to shoot you thing. Because it's bad for business for that to happen, and they don't want to go to war with each other. So they all have a dude that they all equally distrust, essentially, and it's his job to hold members of their gang accountable when they commit crimes against the other gangs. And on some level, I think that premise is quite cool.
Yeah.
I also think it's just deeply unrealistic.
Well, yeah, that's kind of some of my, not even critique necessarily, but just like commenting on, was I was kind of like, is this too far-fetched, or is it just a case of like, well, this is the story, like, and I'm coming from the same aspect you did of like having the same thoughts, but I was like, well, if this is the initial premise, then you can't critique of being unrealistic in the same way you can't be like watching Harry Potter be like, well, magic's not real. Like, it's that same, like, we're starting off here and then we're just seeing where it goes from there, kind of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I absolutely agree. Like, I didn't... Sorry, you'll hear some... I mean, to be honest with you, today's going to be a noisy episode. I just took my jacket off. The dog is asleep. There's a dog now.
And may snore.
We sold the cat. We bought a dog.
Well, I thought the cat turned into a dog.
Oh, did the cat...
Is that not like a puberty thing with those animals?
It's been a bank holiday weekend, man. I don't know.
Could be
what's
anything.
Going on. Yeah, so like, I don't know. The premise... I feel like because this is supposed to be grounded in something a bit more realistic, I would have liked the premise to have made some sense. And like where they took it was fun and interesting. And like you, I found it quite breezy. Like I read it after a relatively long day, which came at the end of a relatively long weekend. And you know, I knocked out what we read in like 45 minutes and I enjoyed it. So I like where they took it, but the whole way through, I was just kind of looking at this character being like, I don't really believe in you very much. I don't really believe that you exist.
Yeah. I kind of got a vibe of like, of the modern BBC Sherlock. Do you know what I mean?
Well, Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah. Like he's so smart. There's the level of intelligence of the characters where the realism and the suspension of disbelief starts to fade.
Because and I think sometimes it rushes towards him having solved the thing, particularly when he seemingly there's a string of murders. There's like essentially somebody in the gangland is committing serial murders amongst other gang members, and he goes to a few of them, but does very little detective work and then solves it.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. With that story, yes.
And like, on that level, I sort of felt, well, actually, we're getting none of what's interesting about a detective story here. Because a detective story is him working it out. Whereas actually what we're seeing is him having worked it out.
Yeah.
And I don't know if, I mean, on some level, that was quite early on, wasn't it? And so I do wonder if that was being used as a narrative device to show us how good he was. But also we weren't really seeing how good he was because we weren't seeing any of his process here. So we're just being told that he's really smart.
Well, we get little bits, but it's little bits.
I mean, he literally tells us what his fucking SAT scores were.
Yes.
Like, that's, you know, it is very heavy-handed in telling us how smart he is.
Yeah.
I don't never really feel that we actually see that.
I think it's we don't see his process because, again, we don't get that in a monologue, but we do get a lot of, like, he will explain, like, well, I got to this point because this, this, and this. And it's very kind of like, it feels like you've jumped some points there.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
I see the line, but I feel like you're missing some parts in between or rushing to a conclusion.
Yeah, I just feel like for a detective story, we're not seeing many of the moving parts here.
Yeah, but I think because he was an ex-detective or an ex-cop, that we expect that, like, again, that detective noir-esque thing of, like, solving the case. Whereas, actually, I think what we're presented with instead is the story of a guy who's keeping law and order in amongst the mobs.
And admittedly, I have been the first person to complain about having too much insight into characters' thought processes in comic books. And here we have a comic book where we don't get any thought process at all, and I'm suddenly complaining about it. And so I understand on some level I'm just very hard to please.
Would you say would you prefer this over the over-expositional thoughts and monologues?
No, I don't know anymore. That's a really hard question to answer. I don't know that it's that.
Well, we cannot continue the podcast until you give an answer for the fans.
Oh, is that how this works?
Yeah, of course. Until you reverse it on me and I am unable to answer, then it's not how it works anymore.
Right, yeah. I see.
I don't make the rules.
Can we tell who edits this podcast?
What, to edit in your answer?
No, just you are very much in control of
the podcast. I said I don't make I don't make the rules though. So,
but you do.
I don't. I feel like I'm just kind of adhering to pre-existing rules that were never vocalized.
Yeah, pre-existing rules that you decided upon without any prior conversation.
Not decided
with
upon.
Me.
I'm just channeling them from the higher sources,
right?
Which
the higher sources
may or may not be religious or government. One of those.
Religious.
Pick your poison. Yeah.
Is this a religious thing? Am I in a cult?
A cult of two people. It's like,
I mean, to be honest with you, Ryan, I think two people is the minimum that you need to start a cult.
Yeah, I tried a one-man cult by myself, but it was the same problem with a one-man band. It's like you're just playing too many instruments by yourself.
And who's going to make the Kool-Aid?
Exactly. If you make the Kool-Aid, you've got to drink it yourself.
Exactly. And then you really don't want to drink that Kool-Aid knowing what you've put in it.
That sounds like a really dark version of like the you've made your bed now line. It's like, well, you made the Kool-Aid, so now you've got to drink it.
We shouldn't be laughing. People died.
They did, yeah. So what I was going to say was we got quite deep into it before I was going to try steer us back towards us starting with the arting thing. Now, I understand that I don't have much to say about the
Me
art.
Me neither.
But I will at least want to compliment it. What's interesting is this feels like a very Image House style, which I think we've seen a bit now.
Yeah, maybe actually.
Because
yeah.
I thought when I first looked at it, I had to double check to see, is this the same artist from like Where the Body Was? Because it looks, that's an Image title. I think that's an Image title.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah, and that looks very similar, but that's Ed Brubaker. I forgot. His surname was Phillips.
Right.
The other person. But it looked like that.
It looked similar, but I really
like that style. And because we see more Marvel House style and DC House style, if this is now the Image House style, I'm totally fine with it because I don't see it as much. But every time I'm like, I like this. Like, I like the rough drawing look and like the shading that's not quite in the lines, but it's kind of rough, but makes the environment feel more like gritty and not realistic, but like gritty and rough, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't find it repulsive. I liked it. I'm definitely on record with you as liking it. I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't pay a whole heap of attention to it. So I'm just looking at it again.
I stopped noticing after a while, which I think is a credit to it. Well, it's more of a credit, I suppose, to the story. But the art was sufficient enough to not distract from the story.
Yeah, it looked fine. It looked good. I definitely think there are moments where things could have been a bit cleaner. I'm just flicking through some of the early pages from issue one now. Compositionally, I think it's interesting at points.
The panel layout was very standard, which I think worked for this kind of story.
Yeah, I mean, like, for instance, here on this panel, we are seeing a sort of an underside view of two people talking in a corridor. A corridor. We're seeing an under...
Are you trying to say cromulent?
It's a perfectly cromulent word. We are viewing two people talking in a corridor from below.
Yeah.
Which is a weird fucking way to have drawn that. And so compositionally, there's some odd stuff happening here, but nothing that you would have noticed scanning through it the first time and reading it, you know?
Incidentally, do you think the word cromulent is trademarked, or do you think we could put that on a t-shirt?
I think it's a perfectly cromulent word would probably upset Fox.
Right.
But I think, I mean, would you spell it with a C or a K?
C, surely.
Then maybe just spell it with a K.
Yeah, cromulent. Yeah, I could see that.
Would anyone...
put silent N as well before, like knight, but still cromulent.
No, that's gross.
Would that be grammatically offensive?
Yeah, well, it would just not make a lot of sense. So if you do listen to the podcast, just let us know. Would you like a t-shirt that says cromulent on it? Because we fancy one.
Seems cromulent. Should we like, so yeah, it's like kind of like an ad lib of...
Or perfectly cromulent.
Yeah, perfectly cromulent.
With an arrow down to the genitals.
And people would be like, I don't know if that's offensive or not.
That is a perfectly cromulent penis.
I don't know if you're being ironic or if you're being self-deprecating or...
or just bragging.
Again, don't even know.
Perfectly cromulent penis.
You decide.
I think we could get away with it.
Yeah, I mean, let's just do it and see if we get sued. I think that's the best way. I think that's the best way to go about in life, really.
I mean, somebody would have to buy one for us to get sued.
Well, write in if you want to buy one and see if we get sued for it.
Yeah, well, we'll try and make them as affordable as possible.
How often do you... It's people selling you stuff on podcasts, like constantly, you know, shilling, like, what is it, dick pills and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not saying we're above that. We just haven't had the offer yet. But how often do you hear that from someone who's shilling it going like, if you buy this thing, we might get in legal trouble for it.
Yeah.
Like that's an added bonus to you buying it.
Because then you get to hear about our legal troubles.
And if the court case goes to like whatever the UK version of the Supreme Court is, I don't know. I'm not learned, but, but if it makes the news, then you'll have a memorabilia from that. From us being in the news for that story and getting arrested and possibly legally fucked. So
we would end up in Crown.
Sure, yeah.
We would end up in the Crown.
I've never
court.
Seen the show, but I wouldn't mind being in it.
I think the only way that either of us would end up in the Crown is if we got nonced by Prince Andrew. Just based on how old we are. The ages that we are and when he was active.
Yeah, but he was in Peter Express at the time, so I don't know what you're on about. Also, he doesn't sweat.
What's that? What is the not sweating thing?
So I think it was in the picture or when the woman whose name unfortunately I can't recall, but when her story or testimony or whatever you want to call it was described him as sweaty at that event.
Right.
And his response was, well, because of PTSD from my time in the war, I don't know which war or just the military or whatever. He was like, my sweat glands stopped working.
I think he was a pilot. In the 80s, so he probably would have flown something in the Falklands, I imagine.
Yeah, but essentially his story was, well, I don't sweat, so checkmate.
Wow.
And everyone went, it's not good enough. That's not good enough.
I mean, in fairness, it was good enough because he is a free prince.
Yeah, but I feel like he could have done any... I feel like he could have admitted it and still not faced any repercussions, which is unfortunately the dark reality of the royal family.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, if you can, if anyone who... I think the Crown is finished now. I think they ended it with Diana dying.
Didn't a ghost come back and, like, forgive Prince Andrew? Charles, yeah.
Did that happen?
Apparently. I didn't see it, but I saw the uproar against it. So I assume it did happen.
I didn't. I watched it. I didn't see that bit.
Did you finish it?
Yeah.
Oh. A lot of people are angry about something, and I don't know what it was.
There was an episode where the Queen had a nightmare that they were crowning Tony Blair as king.
That's everyone's nightmare.
And they had a quote. It was amazing. She was walking down the sort of aisles in the big church that they use for that stuff. One of the ones in London. And the choir was singing the song that he used for his ad campaigns.
I don't remember. I had it for a second.
It's gonna get better. That one.
Good Lord. And then he was like, yeah, war in the Middle East.
Hey! Yeah, all right then. Well, but in the 90s, in the early 90s, people fucking loved Tony Blair.
Yeah.
It was only after he started murdering people in the Middle East that we were like, you know what, Tone? You should probably call it off.
Hey, not so cromulent.
Not cromulent at all, Tony.
Yeah, bringing it back round. So, story-wise, I think we've got a lot more to say than the art. But the art, it felt like the art needed discussing at the very least.
Yeah, so, but, I mean, the story, there's a lot going on. It's quite... But again, there's a lot going on. There's always something happening. But it bounces along quite quickly, and everything's relatively simple to follow.
So I think I've got two areas here that I think we can dive into. Yep. Just conceptually of the whole thing, without even spoiling. So,
okay.
To clarify as well, probably should have mentioned this up top, we're doing the first volume, first 8 issues.
Yeah.
A good sample of it.
A good dip test.
Yes, exactly. So the first thing is, like you said before, the premise. So the premise being a bit unrealistic, not as believable.
Mm.
I think, again, my argument is, I know exactly what you mean. I'm not arguing the point or anything.
Yeah.
But from my perspective, I think it did felt like, here's the unlikely premise. Like, there is a guy who is hired by all the mobs. And they do explain later how he got started in that. And it's part, you know, these circumstances just happen to happen. And also a bit of, like, his own moral whatevers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think it's unrealistic. But I think that is because it's the premise. My thing is, I think I've said this before about superhero stuff.
Yeah.
You get the premise and you get, like, the world. You get those, you make whatever you want with them. And then once they're locked in, then you have to commit to them. Then you can't be introducing like new stuff just out of nowhere or deus exes or whatever.
Mm.
So for me, for them to be like, here's this guy, he's in this really unlikely, like almost fantastical situation, and then go. And I felt like they did stick to that kind of world and everything. So I was fine with the overall premise because of that. But you say you still had issues with it as you read, or?
Well, I mean, not so much. I mean, you're questioning me quite hard on this thing.
I just say, more for an interesting discussion more than anything else.
Yeah,
If you've said your piece, you said your piece.
Yeah, well, I think I have. Like, I think, yeah, so to surmise,
right.
I found the premise a little bit laboured. I just found it a bit unrealistic, the idea that the mob would hire this one guy who would act as a go-between, and, you know, they would all kind of just honour him, you know, his right to, like, live or whatever. I just found it a little far-fetched. And again, like, the rules that they established there held true through most of it. And so there's a lot of times where I'm like, he would have just gotten offed here. Like, he
really?
Definitely. Yeah, particularly when he's there with the head of the Albano family.
Yeah.
And you're kind of looking at that situation going, yeah, fuck, they would have just shot him. They would have just buried him. Regardless of what the other gangs thought about it, they would have buried him there.
But again, the premise seems to be that if they did that, then all the gangs would then be at war. Not only just because of him not being there to stop them going to war, but there also does seem to be agreement of, if any of the families kill him, then the other families will retaliate against that one family because they all value him as a...
Yeah, but they already have this, like, the Black Castle. So they introduce this safe space where they can all meet and talk.
Yeah, but that's...
So if they offed him for collaborating with the cops, they would just say, hey, guys, you need to pop around the castle. And they'd all get around a table and go, by the way, I knew he was working with the cops, didn't really like it, shot him in the face. And they'd all go... Probably pretty sage advice, mate.
Do you not think the other gangs would be like, is that why you offed him? Or did you off him because he discovered something about you guys that you don't want us to know about? And then inherent paranoia between these kind of mobsters, like, you know, whole, like, was it honor among thieves? It's complete bullshit. Like, they're obviously going to suspect each other of, like, the worst intentions at every time. And they barely trust Newburn. Like, when there is the serial killings, they're like, well, we're going to have a guy follow you. And Newburn at least can be like, no, don't. And they still follow him anyway, but at least they're not like, with him, like shadowing him, like next to him.
Yes.
So even then, they still don't barely trust Newburn. But if then he's the person they trust the most outside of their organization. And then if someone of the others killed him, I don't think they would just immediately take the, oh, he's talking to the police. Like, really? Like, where's your evidence?
Yeah, potentially not, actually. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right.
And I think that this does require a little bit of like, okay, here's my headcanon of why this works. Yeah. And I don't think it's enough. Like, I have a level, I don't know about you or anyone else, I have a level of how much headcanon do you require from me to make it work?
Yeah.
But that's also on me being someone who needs these bits filled.
Yes.
Like, other people will read this and not have any issue because they don't think about it like us.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
For a podcast, especially.
Yeah, they're not thinking about it on the same level that we have.
Exactly.
But beyond that, like, again, I'm being quite critical. And this isn't to say I didn't enjoy it, because I did, but there are just holes.
Yeah.
So we see him having an altercation with the head of the Albano family.
Yeah.
Albano.
Yeah. I think. Sounds like Italian, doesn't
it? It's an American-Italian name, so fuck knows.
Albano.
Yeah, like, again, it's an Italian-American name.
How do you pronounce it if you hold your fingers all
Albano.
Together? There you go. Yeah.
The Albano family.
Apologies to any Italian listeners.
Let's make sure we apologize to the Italian listeners, not the American Italian listeners.
Oh, no, I don't care about them.
Yeah, they can fuck off. unless, of course, you are in a mob and you're listening. Imagine if there was a guy who worked in a mob who listened to the Comic Letter podcast.
I loved this podcast, but then you won't believe what he said.
And he's just like, he's got his headphones on, he's on Spotify, he's on his way to go whack someone.
He's eating some spaghetti.
He's like, yeah, no, he's been hanging out in the back of like a shady gambling establishment in New York.
Mm.
And then he's on his way to whack somebody and he pops his headphones on and he's like, oh, what should I listen to? A little bit of music? No. Those guys who talk about the comic books, and he puts us on.
Ooh, they're reading one about mobs. That's right up my alley.
Oh, that's really, and then we just fucking absolutely character assassinate this guy. And then he flies to England.
And then he goes, Mamma Mia.
But no, so Newbin's having an altercation with somebody in the mob.
Mm. The Albano family.
The Albano family. Yep. The Albano. And then in the next issue, he's just in prison. And I was like, oh, cheers, guys. There is really some steps in between that I would like to have seen. And, you know, you said, oh, just stay with it. They kind of fill the blanks in. And they kind of fill the blanks in. Not that well.
I mean, it was enough for me. Like, not so much that I'm going to be like, I'm not going to adamantly defend it, but I read it and I was like, ooh, he's in prison for some reason. And then they explain. And I go, okay, that's a very Newburn reason to be in prison.
Like, yeah.
My issue with that, slightly differently, and I think this is just a general thing when you have this level of like, not even complexity, but like characters, like motivations and doing actions that other characters be like, I knew you were going to do that or that kind of thing. My thing was, he's in prison basically because he's working on a case, essentially. And that's a reveal of that issue. And basically he's like, yeah, I got in to find out who was leaking information, basically. But it really relied hard on, it resolved fairly quickly. I didn't mind his original reason for being in there.
Yeah.
It just resolved very quickly because you could see the strings that got pulled, like,
yes,
after the fact. It's like, oh, that's why he was there in that place at that time with that person. But then it was very quickly, the person was like, yeah, by the way, it was me. Like, and then it was like, got him. And it's like, that was very quick for him to like,
well, yeah,
give away this information.
It was just all a bit, exactly. It was all a bit convenient. It was all a bit brief. And I get it, because this is the kind of story we're reading. And like, they didn't have room to have five issues of him in prison, just juking out with people while he's getting to know this guy and building his trust and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I would have liked to have seen that. Like, that would have been a really interesting story. That would have been a really interesting point to start the run.
Yeah, yeah.
Is with him in prison, and then you watch him build this relationship with this guy, you watch him build his trust, and then we see him quick, sharp, released, and then he's back out dealing with the mob.
Mm.
That would have been a really cool way of introducing me to this character. I don't know that it was great kind of towards the end of a 5 and 8 issue volume.
I think with this, one thing I noticed, what could be a negative towards it in the sense that it could have been better without this, is the fact that they really try to make a case per issue for the first 5 issues.
Yeah.
Now, I enjoyed it because I enjoy this in a similar way that I enjoy like John Wick, where it's like, I enjoyed seeing the events happening.
Sorry, that just really got me.
I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, again, I've not. Do you know what? I've not seen John Wick.
John Wick 1 and John Wick 4 are the best. 2 is all right. 3 is.
They made 4 of them.
Yeah. Does 4th is amazing.
Does he find out who killed the dog yet?
Yeah, he did that in 1.
Oh, okay.
It happened in front of him.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. Right, and okay. Credit to the John Wick series. There's no kind of like, you thought it was him, but it was actually me, the real villain. Like, that. It just escalates. Like, well, you killed him. Now I'm pissed. And then he kills that person. Like, well, I'm pissed you killed that person. And then it just keeps escalating.
Right.
Like,
okay.
But you don't watch John Wick for the story. In the same way you don't go to McDonald's for a salad. You watch John Wick for the action scenes and the fighting. The story is literally just we need a reason for him to be fighting everyone.
Yes.
And if anyone who complains about a John Wick story, I'm like, what did you expect? So in the same, I had that thought with this, because for the first 5 issues, it's like, you're not there to see how this detective figures it out or how this person manages this hard position. It's more like, hey, do you want to see someone tell mobsters to fuck off but they need him so he's able to? Like, that's kind of what you're there for.
Yeah, I suppose it kind of is, isn't it? On that level, it absolutely fucking delivers. Mm. It definitely delivers on that level.
And this is why I kind of, like, since doing this especially, my thoughts on, like, consuming any kind of media, fiction specifically, my thinking is, what is the goal of the thing?
Form and function.
Yeah, because if you're criticizing, what's the old thing, like, the recent... Not even recent, it's been a few years, but like people criticize the Marvel films like, oh, it's a film you meant to turn your brain off. Like, does that mean you're meant to be stupid to like it? And it's like, it's a criticism. It's like a straw man criticization of like, that's a dumb thing to say in the first place. And you're now criticizing it to make yourself look smart. But Marvel films aren't meant to be Citizen Kane or 12 Angry Men or anything.
Yes.
Like, that's not their function at all. That's not their purpose. So in the same way with this, I was like, what am I getting out of it? And I think you have to make that decision, especially in the first issue. It kind of tells you, like, here's a guy, he's extremely competent to almost a Batman level, and this is what he does. And by that first issue, you gotta be like, do you want to see more of this? And I'm like, yeah, I'll see some more of him doing this. Exactly.
And on that level, it's really enjoyable. Mm. On that level, it is. You are right, it's really enjoyable. The story bounces along quite promptly, and things resolve very neatly.
But the fact that
it kind of reminds me on some level of like the Bond novels. Like, it gives me the same sense of satisfaction that they used to as a teenager, where it's sort of like, you know what's going to happen roughly, you know what's going down.
There's some twists and turns in the case, but not in like him solving it. It's because he reveals to you, it's like, by the way, this is the thing. And as the reader, I kind of went, oh, that's interesting. Like, oh, this person did it. Like, oh, that's neat.
I agree with you. I think I'm inclined to agree. It just pops along and does its thing, and it does it quite well.
Yeah, but the fact again that they explicitly try to fit a case per issue, and they still only had like 22 pages of typical comic book issues, I think for me there was a lot of time dedicated to like character and stuff and conversations to make them realistic and interesting. So I love that about it. But at the same time, the last like 3 pages, like, right, let's wrap this case up quick and move on to the next one.
I mean, I think it was interesting, because so one of the core things that we've not talked about in this yet is that he hires this random woman.
Yes, and she's kind of the Watson to a Sherlock.
Yes, and so he hires her because she framed one of the gang members for murder, essentially.
She framed a drug dealer for a murder of a gang member, or the son of a... of a mobster.
Son of a mobster who had been sent away to...
Been kicked out of the mob, I think.
Kicked out of the gang and was laying low in an apartment building in New York. She framed him for the murder of a drug dealer. Mm. Had a bunch of cocaine in her wall.
I did like how Newburn worked that out.
Yeah.
Also, spoilers from here on in, just in case.
And Newburn was like, yeah, you're cool. I'm going to give you a job. Mm. He gives her a job. And it turns out that it transpires that she was a...
detective in training, or police training.
She was in Police Academy 5.
Yeah. The one with the guy who does the woo,
exactly,
makes the noises.
She was in the Police Academy, and she killed the son of a mobster who the mob had managed to get into the Police Academy, presumably just to have a member of the family in the force.
Yeah, so that killing was an accident. It was one of those fights outside of a... or in a bar alley, and he falls and hits his head on a dumpster. It's a very accidental death.
She punches him in the throat, he hits his head on a dumpster. He dies, and obviously it's bad for business for Newburn for him to have somebody working for him who murdered a member of the Albano family however many years ago.
Yeah.
And it transpires that, you know, this all kind of transpires and starts to come out because one of the cops that he is working with cracks and shit hits the fan on that level. And I thought that was nice because it added some texture.
Yeah.
But it also was serendipitous.
It also got to a point, what I liked about it was he had to kind of burn his relationship with the police.
Yes.
Not in a way that he couldn't work with them in the future, but as he kind of explicitly says, and I thought in a good way, like he's kind of angrily shouting at this police detective. He's like, you thought this was a quid pro quo. Like, yeah. he'd obviously made it seem that way for the benefit of the relationship.
Yeah.
But then yeah, say, you thought it was a quid pro quo. It's not. You work for me. I run this town.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
I thought that was a cool part because that's him losing his cool, which he normally doesn't do.
Yes. Yeah. He lost his rag a little bit, didn't he? And I like that. And I enjoyed seeing, what was her name?
Emily.
Emily. She has a couple of different names. I can't keep it straight, really, if I'm being honest with you. But I liked seeing, there was issue 6, and we see snapshots of her life through different years. And it explicitly
only issue without
us,
Newburn, which was very interesting.
Yeah, only issue without Newburn. And we go through and we see her life through the years, off, you know, from her being a child through to her being in the police academy to now. And I thought that was really interesting because it gave it a lot of color and a lot of texture. Just in terms of like, you know, we knew we were about to have this big character reveal. We were about to find out that this thing had happened, and it gave us a lot of information and really made us as readers bond with her before they did that.
Yeah,
and that's quite clever. You know, you don't want to take a character and put them in peril to try and elicit a response without actually making us like them first.
And this is a comic that's not afraid to have an issue without the title character.
Yeah, totally.
And trust the readers will be like, well, we've gone in the past of this other character. Maybe there's a big reason for it and I should follow along. And I thought it pays off with the last two issues. So
yeah.
Issue 7 and 8. That's when the storybook goes out of case of the week per issue, and then it becomes here's now a running story. Like the last three issues are like a three-parter,
yeah,
essentially.
And here's Newburn kind of dealing with this, the fallout from this situation, and actually managing all of these different relationships.
Yeah.
And for me, that was the most interesting part of the lot.
And maybe like we were kind of criticizing the first five issues,
yeah,
for being that very standard, here's a new case kind of thing. But maybe that was to set up the pattern. And then when the sixth issue breaks the pattern, then you go, oh, something's happening. So it's like, if you've stuck with it by issue 5, issue 6 then gives you like a, we're going to do something even more interesting,
yeah,
now.
Yeah, potentially, actually. And it did start to get a bit more interesting and pick up a bit of depth in the last two issues, didn't it?
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
I want to see the fallout. Like, if we keep reading, I might. Like, it was good enough that I'm strongly considering adding it to my rotation.
Yeah.
I would like to see the fallout of his relationship with that detective, because she was the only one. Everyone else was like, what the fuck are you letting... Well, not everyone, but like, there were a few cops who were like, why are you letting this guy in? Like, he works for the mob. And she had to be like, trust me, it's fine. And then to be like, yeah, he gives us bits of information in exchange for this, access to crime scenes and stuff. Bit of a Batman-esque kind of relationship. But then I want to see that fallout later on of like, she's not going to be so welcoming, but also this situation has not changed.
Yeah, totally.
So if they do address that past issue 8 in the second volume, that could be very interesting.
Yeah, and I'm hoping, like, I would be interested to read more of this. I would be.
So one topic that I thought would be really interesting to discuss.
Yeah.
So, and it kind of fits into like what you're saying about the disbelief or the suspension of disbelief and the realism of it all. Did you find Newburn to be what I've researched as the term being a Marty Sue? So the male equivalent of a Mary Sue.
Yeah, kind of. Is that a thing? A Marty Sue?
I think people use it now for obvious reasons.
Yeah, kind of actually, yeah.
So
yeah.
I was debating this like by myself.
Internally.
Yeah. Because on the one hand, a Mary Sue is someone who's great at everything. Like they're good at everything in the show, comic, film, whatever. And they solve everything because they're just so good at it.
I mean, so we see him get cornered by like three or four members of the Yakuza and he fights them off.
Yes.
He ends up in prison and he instantly uses a piece of unknown evidence to get himself released.
Which I did prefer that to him fighting, or he used the information to stop getting beaten up.
Yeah.
But I preferred that to him just being able to fight off everyone.
But he did just fight off the Yakuza, guys. So he can just fight really well.
Was that the one where he fought someone and then he gave himself up? which was weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he did.
But he's still like completely nutmegged that guy.
Proficient in fighting.
Yeah.
And
no, he is a bit of a Mary Sue. Like he, I mean, I would say he just has very thick plot armor.
Well, yeah.
Very thick plot armor.
Like Batman.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. Like, you know, this comic doesn't really work without him. We know he's going to survive. We know he has to survive. So whenever he's in peril, you sort of go, well, he's going to get out of it, isn't he?
Yeah. My thinking was, I think he is good. He gets out of every situation because he's so good at it. And that's very Mary My Sue-esque. But I do think Mary My Sue's normally also are morally good as well. You rarely see like a morally ambiguous perfect character. And it's very much established that this character is... He has a moral code, but he does a lot of bad shit as well.
Yeah, potentially.
And they do try and remedy that without him being like, well, I was in the police, and then they were going to plant drugs on a Yakuza member, and I thought that was off, so I told the Yakuzas, and then they gave me money, and that's how I got in this role. So I'm wondering if, does it still apply? Can a morally ambiguous character be a Mary Sue?
Yeah, I think in this instance they can.
Because we wouldn't say that about a villain. Like a full-on villain who is so extremely competent and be everything, we would be like, oh God, how is the protagonist going to beat them? Because they seem to be really good at everything.
Yeah.
But when it's the protagonist, that makes it boring. Because it's like, well, we know they're going to get out of it because they're really good at everything and they're so good they haven't had any issues.
I mean, it's interesting because he's not a very likable protagonist, is he?
No, and I don't think he's meant to be. I think it's explicitly... He's not meant to be likable.
Because we don't see... I mean, we only see him smile once.
Mm. Emily refers to only seeing him smile once.
Yeah, absolutely. And we don't even see it. You're right. Yeah. Emily refers to it. We don't see him smile. We don't really see any of his interior monologue. We just see him going around doing his thing, which, to be honest with you, is kind of dirty work.
Exactly. And this is what I'm saying. Like, can you apply that Mary Sue... My Sue thing if they're doing bad shit?
Potentially not. But that then doesn't... And I understand the comparison you made earlier to Sherlock, because Benedict Cumberbatch's Sherlock is just way too proficient in everything. Yeah.
And the superior modern Sherlock adaptation is Elementary, starring Johnny Lee Miller and Lucy Liu.
Johnny Lee Miller, is that the guy who was in Trainspotting?
Yes. He plays a great Sherlock.
Does he?
Yeah. But like totally modern version, like his own version. Like,
when did that happen?
Like years ago. It was at like the 2010s, I think.
The Babe?
No, America. So it was like American made and set in America.
Because Johnny Lee Miller is American, isn't he?
No, British.
Is he British?
Yeah.
Is
he? He plays British. So he's British Sherlock, but he moves to America.
Right. Well, no, because I was asking what nationality the actor was.
Pretty sure he's British.
Yeah? Because I know he's not Scottish.
No, not like Trainspotting, no.
No, yeah, he definitely wasn't Scottish. I always assumed he was American. Oh, that's really interesting. I really like him.
It's really good because he is like, he's a believable level of like extremely intelligent. It's more his drive that's the thing. Like in the BBC Sherlock, there's points where he like has a mind palace and he knows the map of London off by heart and he can like tell where a taxi's going because he closes his eyes and mind computers the fucking London Underground or whatever. Johnny Lee Miller's one, he spends most of his time when they're not actively on a case, he's always like, oh, I'm researching this. And it's some like obscure thing. Like at one point he's like, oh, I'm looking at the differences in tobacco ashes of different cigarettes so I can recognize one when I see him.
Yes.
So he's really like constantly trying to like give himself this information. Yeah. And then when he's in the thing, he's just like, you know, he's not like, oh, I could tell the perpetrator's name because they left a footprint or whatever. It's very much like he finds a secret room because the floor slants. Like he notices the slant in the floor and he puts like a ball, marble or something on it and it rolls down. He's like, this would only happen because there's an extra room here kind of thing.
Do you know how Sherlock, actual like book Sherlock Holmes, spends all of his downtime between cases?
Heroin.
Or cocaine.
So, and again, what's interesting is the American one, the reason he moves to America is because he's just got out of rehab in the UK and he moved to a new area to like get away from his old...
Clever.
And he's constantly like, in the first series, the reason he lives with Joan Watson, played by Lucy Liu, she's what's called a sober companion.
Yeah.
So she literally moves in with people to help them stop doing drugs or kind of thing, rehabilitate. And then he's like, you're really smart. Do you want to just follow me on my cases? And she's got to follow him everywhere and stuff. And it's really good. If you like Sherlock stuff, I highly recommend it.
I might watch it. I'm amazed I've never heard of it.
It wasn't that well known in the UK, probably because we had the BBC one. Everyone's like, this is actually the best because Benedict Cumberbatch plays an autistic psychopath and that's the Sherlock we like now.
I always thought Martin Freeman was good at it, but Martin Freeman's good. Martin Freeman's good in everything, though.
Yeah, he's never been bad in anything.
No.
I don't think so.
I mean, he makes Ali G for me.
Do you know how him and... Was the guy who played Smeagol or Gollum in Lord of the Rings? Andy Serkis.
Yes.
They were the only two... I said not the only two. They were the two white guys in Black Panther. And apparently the black actors refer to them as the Tolkien white guys. Which is one of the... best bits of banter you'll ever hear.
That's so funny. The so Lord good. Of the Rings dudes are here.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God. So back to the comic.
Main point, Newburn might be a Mary Sue, might not. It's a discussion. It's an interesting discussion to be
yes.
had.
Yes. But beyond that, I think, like, this certainly...
I enjoyed Emily's journal was kind of like a Watson's writing of Sherlock kind of thing, but doubled as the... That actually kind of replaced the inner monologue aspect because you would get this ancillary information
yes.
in these journal pages. And that's a thing that you've described before, like Dracula. What's that type of... There's like a word for it where it's like writing and then there's like pages of
epistolary.
Information.
Epistolary.
Epistolary. So it's a little bit like that, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a little bit of an epistolary element because we see Emily's diaries, which again was cool.
I liked especially because the third page after he discovers that she was the murderer in the first issue and yeah. then offers her a job or offers hire, and then her page journal is just fuck. And then I was like, this is actually really good.
Yeah, this is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, like, I don't have a whole lot to say about this because it was just good, clean fun.
Yes.
Like, I enjoyed it. There were some plot holes. There were some moments where I was kind of a bit confused as to where it was. Like, not... Yeah, I was... That's completely wrong. I was never confused as to where it was going, but there were some moments where I didn't see how it got from A to B. Because it didn't show you how it got from A to B.
Are there any parts that you can recall that we might be able to work out our answer?
I mean, very much when we went from him having that showdown with the Albano family to him being in prison. And obviously we work out that he was in prison for shooting somebody from the Albano family,
right? I feel like those are two separate bits and the Albano thing gets resolved at the end of issue 4, I think.
Did I just miss some of the end of issue 4 potentially?
Potentially. We're now gonna take a quick break that won't be noticed on the podcast because someone will edit out. I don't know who.
Yeah.
And then we'll see how we go from there.
Mm.
So we've determined what it was. It was the police union, not the Albano family. But I think the point is, and why it could be confusing, the point of that issue where the police union are trying to get him yeah. to work for them like he does the gangs. And he's like, I don't work for the police and the gangs would kill me if I did kind of yeah. thing. The point of that comic is it paints the police union like a gang.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so when he's talking to the head of the police union, it literally looks like he's just talking to the head of a mob, basically.
Yes.
Which is the point of the comic. And I think the point of that issue is Emily describes them. He's like, oh, they're like the mobs, but worse because they do all their shit in the daylight and they've got immunity because of the government and the state and everything. And the only thing, she puts it quite well, she says, the only thing they fear is in the police and the unions is people's phone cameras.
Yeah.
And even then, they normally get away with it anyway.
Exactly, yeah.
Which is true to real life, so.
Fucking A. Yeah, no, okay. So, yeah, in general, I enjoyed it. In general, I enjoyed it. I think the story moves along at a really good pace. I have ruminated upon it while we've been talking about it, and I think it is really good that we don't see too much of Newburn's interior monologue.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think it makes him as a character. I think it makes him really unlikable, which is really fun. Makes him unlikable and unknowable, and it means that you're kind of observing him as the same force of nature that all the other characters are.
Yeah.
And that's kind of interesting, isn't it? As opposed to like the Human Target, where we see a lot of the inner workings of his mind. Even though I think that was a better representation of like a noir detective story than this, if I'm being completely honest.
100%. I mean, you're talking about one of my favorite comics of all time, so yeah, I'm 100% on board.
But do you see what I mean? Like, it's a different. It gives it a different feel to that, and I like this for that.
Yeah, I'd be very interested to see if second volume is already out right now. If anyone wants to read more,
we could just smash it out.
We could. I'm very interested to see if that continues the longer plot arcs. Because it's the same like TV shows as well. Like, first couple of episodes will be a kind of standard stuff establishing the pattern.
Yeah.
And then when it starts, that's when it feels like, oh, shit's getting real because they haven't solved this in one episode or one issue. And then that's when it builds up. So I like the idea that they ramp up things and things get more difficult and more...
The stakes get higher.
Yeah, exactly. But also, I would like them to keep doing occasionally the single issue things as well. Just make them interesting as well. There's a thing with superhero comics where, because they'll have their arcs, yeah. as we know, but sometimes what they do is they'll have like an arc that's like 5 or 8 issues long or whatever. Before the next one starts, they'll do a 1 or 2 single issue stories that are just a bit fun. Mm. It's like, we're starting the next big story and that's going to be, you know, big important stuff, but let's just have a bit of fun with an issue first, yeah. or something. So I'd be interested to see if they do that kind of stuff as well. But otherwise, I think that's covered pretty much yeah. it without spoiling every little detail.
Yeah.
What your final, Jamie's final thoughts was that?
Jamie's final thoughts. I don't think it's Chip Zdarsky's best work.
That's
fair. I'm being completely honest.
He's set a high bar.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think Public Domain was a more well-realized story.
And some of the best Daredevil you'll ever read.
Some of the best Daredevil that I haven't read.
Dead Devil is the past tense version.
But I did enjoy it. And I think that if you want a story that is just a story, and you want something that does have something to say about the world, but isn't, you know, punching too hard, definitely give this a go.
I'd be interested to know, because we don't know any of this relevant information, how much of this is not true, but how close is this to the real New York gang situation? Because as non-Americans, and especially non-New Yorkians, New Yorkers, we don't know, like, what the situation is there. We can assume there are gangs operating in New York, yeah. most likely, but is there some kind of truce between them, or is there any kind of work between them at all? I know there was a big thing with, what's his name, Rudy Giuliani, got credited for, like, kicking out all the mobsters during his time, which is like that, and being the mayor of New York during 9/11 that got him like quite favorable opinions of the rest of the country, and then he fucked up later. But then there's a whole thing where, like, oh yeah, he kicked out all the mobs, but the Russians seem to do all right, suspiciously well. There was a whole thing with that. I'm alleging, that's alleged stuff, yeah. I'm not saying anything for sure. All I do know about Giuliani is he did have that hair dye run down his face that one time,
right, which completely discredits everything he's ever said,
of course. Also, he was at that where they had a press event at the Four Seasons, like, for Trump, but it was Four Seasons Landscaping Company, not the Four Seasons.
Oh right, okay.
Which was a memorable funny moment.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know, I don't know much about the guy, because I don't read the news, do I?
No. Rather than talk about Giuliani, but more like, again, the real life New York situation. Because again, they must have had gang stuff going on. And
yeah, there must be gangs in New York.
Do you think there was any, what do you think, like, believability of, like, the gangs, like, working together? Because I think, I mean, that's how the cartel started in Mexico.
Yeah, totally. And do you know what? I suppose the general idea that they had that the gangs making lots of noise, i.e. shooting each other, stabbing each other, bang, bang, all that shit, causing trouble and making business more difficult for them, that makes logical sense. If you have so little control over your gang members that they're murdering other gang members and causing press and police interaction and just making noise, that has to be bad for business, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Like, that has to be bad for business.
Well, they I think Emily describes it in one of her journal posts where she says, is it like deaths on the street, or, you know, murders brings public attention, which brings politicians, which brings police, and that's just bad for everyone.
Exactly.
And yeah, I think there's some, must be some semblance of truth of, like, hey, let's all agree that we all make more money if we do it this way. And then obviously this fantastical step is, and let's elect this man, this scary ex-cop man, to be our sheriff and police us, kind of thing.
Exactly.
But yeah, interesting nonetheless. I enjoyed it, and I may or may not read some more, depending on, I'm well behind on my comics right now.
Well, I look forward to your update.
Yeah, the X-Men and the whole Krakoa thing, that ended like months ago, and yeah. I'm still at like the ending phase where it's like falling apart. So I'm like trying to resist spoilers of, like, you know, how it's all panned out and stuff and what's going on. But yeah, I'm going to be a while before I get to this second volume. But hopefully, fingers crossed, hopefully.
So,
do we, I mean, we've got a little bit of extra time than we might normally do. Do we want to fulfill the hour requirement with some friendly banter, perhaps?
Well, we've done an hour. We've talked to the people long enough, I think.
Yeah, but you're not accounting for all those bits we've got that someone will be editing out.
Okay.
You know those poems where, like, the Tannoy goes, over the Tannoy goes, you will be cancelled for that. Or something like that.
I mean, what kind of friendly banter do you want?
Well, is there any kind of media or content that you're consuming recently or anything like that that you don't want to talk about at all?
Dude, it's been a bank holiday weekend. I work in a pub.
Is it push you too far?
Like, so I last saw, it's Monday today. We're at the end of a bank holiday weekend. I last saw you on Friday. I've spent the past 3 days in a pub in Bunny Ears, though that is the thing that I've done.
them bloody Playboy, the Playboy parties, Jesus. If,
I know, right? The whip gets cracked. If you want to introduce another topic, you can, but you cannot rely on me to introduce anything interesting. I am a shell of a man.
That's fair enough. I feel like I put you on the spot slightly. You put,
like, if I'd had like a really relaxing, lovely weekend where I just kind of sat and read books and ruminated on the nature of man, I definitely could have pulled something out of my bum. But yeah. I've literally been in Bunny Ears serving people beer for like 3 days. That's all I've done. I did get really curious about trees the other day.
Really?
I got really curious about trees, but I don't think the listeners want to hear about that.
I think we can establish that trees are in fact real. I think that's the baseline that we can all agree on.
I wasn't curious about their existence. I was just curious about their functions.
I think they're government 5G antennas, I think. I read that somewhere.
Somebody
might have been Joe Rogan experience.
I saw somebody said this on Twitter. Trees, like, I would like trees better if they gave like Wi-Fi or whatever.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, because, you know, the oxygen they provide isn't useful at all.
Well, the way I see it is, I'm not seeing the oxygen benefiting me, but the Wi-Fi, I would see the symbol with the full bars, and that would deliver serotonin to my brain. So one's better than the other, clearly.
Yes. I mean, well, obviously.
Well, I'll end on a couple of things I've been watching, which I think people should be watching.
Okay.
One is The Bad Batch Season 3, Star Wars stuff. Flew under the radar. I've barely seen anyone talking about it, and it's the best season of that show so far.
Yeah.
Also some of the best Star Wars, in my opinion. I like that it's very far from Jedi stuff.
Yeah.
It's very rebels and the Empire's taken over and what's this new world like and that kind of stuff. Very great character as well. Do you know The Bad Batch, the premise? So it's clones who were defective in some way, but these are the ones that like were defective, but we could still use them for other stuff.
Right.
So you've got one that's like, the defectiveness makes him a great hunter, like tracker. One is a demolitions expert. One is a tech expert. And one is a sniper expert. So like of all the ones that go wrong and they just chuck in the bin, it's like, actually, these ones could actually be something. Thus, The Bad Batch. But yeah, season 3, fantastic, like really like gripping Star Wars, like emotional beats, character arcs, like more than you'd expect from standard.
Is it animated?
Yeah, it's a Rebel style, Clone Wars style. Follows on from that, similar characters.
Cool.
And the other thing, I'd be surprised if anyone listening to this wasn't watching this, but X-Men 97 is surpassing expectations.
Okay.
It's so good.
Probably should have led with that. It's more on brand for us.
I mean, Star Wars is that nerd culture stuff, isn't it?
I suppose Star Wars is pretty on brand for us. X-Men is very on brand for
us. I mean, we just did X-Men recently to tie in.
So is it good? Are you enjoying it?
I love it. It's just so camp of like that night, well, that 80s X-Men era comics. But the animation is like top tier.
Yeah.
Like they've made Cyclops cool.
Which is impossible.
Which was fun. There's a bit in the first opening fight sequence where these guys, they're like anti-mutant kind of guys, and they're like found a guy who they think is a mutant and they do whatever, and they've got like sentinel tech for like weapons and stuff, and basically Cyclops busts in, and not only is he just a good fighter because he's always been there, but he's using his blast not only to like hit people, but he does a thing where while he's moving, he'll move himself out of the way by firing his blast at the floor, and that propels him back like a moonwalk without even the walking. But he does that to like quickly move out of the way.
Yeah.
And immediately I think everyone watching was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah,
like,
that's doing this stuff.
Also, he has what people are describing as the best superhero landing of all time, because they jump from a jet that's been destroyed and everyone else is being caught by the flyers, so like Rogue, Storm, you know, Morph turns into Angel, and Cyclops, they get everyone else. Cyclops is like, good work team, and he just blasts his eyes at the floor until it stops him and then just slowly lands. And it's like, oh my God, they made Cyclops cool. That's amazing.
Yeah, because he was always a bit of a nerd, wasn't he?
Yeah, Boy Scout leader kind of thing. Very a very Leonardo archetype.
Yes. Yeah.
One of the most Leonardo characters I've ever seen who's not Leonardo. But yeah, they're doing that and a lot of people got angry because they took Rogue's ass away.
Oh, yeah, fair. Cool. I rate it. Like, I get it.
I mean, it's a kid's show. It's like, she can't have as much cake as she did in the 90s.
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of weird because that's more trendy now than it was then. In the 90s, it was fashionable to be very skinny. Whereas actually having a bit of a cake now, like, when people go to the gym to build a cake, don't they?
True. But I think when you're looking at kids' TV, it's like, maybe because it's so prevalent everywhere else, it's like, maybe we don't need it in the kids' TV show anymore.
Maybe it just doesn't need to be there.
And we both well know, and any other listeners who are within the same kind of age bracket know, the 90s was a time of unintended sexual awakenings by kids watching these cartoons and just... They didn't need to draw the line that sexy. And I'm not saying that. I'm just saying people said that.
Yeah. I mean, we in the 90s were watching that going, fucking hell.
I mean, Lola Bunny from Space Jam.
You fucking
Jesus
hell.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, Jessica Rabbit. Jesus.
Well, that was very explicit. I think that was an intended.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, no, that was very explicit, wasn't it? But you are right. Lola Bunny. Yes. Yeah.
So I think...
Misty.
Well...
For me as a six-year-old boy...
Yeah, per person kind of thing. I could see that. I'm probably more of a Jesse, you know.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But also, do you remember Kim Possible? Are you either Kim Possible or your, what was her name, Shigo?
Yeah. I'm familiar with the memes. I didn't watch either of them.
Yeah, I watched them as a kid. And again, I think it shaped me to the man I am today. Absolutely. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Write in if you think that was a good thing or a bad thing.
Okay, yeah, we will let the listeners decide.
All right, I think we're past the mid-roll and the end-roll ads that we don't have.
Absolutely.
But we're practicing for the future.
Get in there.
This is the point in time where you would normally hear a Raid Shadow Legends shill.
Yes, which come at us, right?
We will literally do anything for money.
Absolutely, literally, we'll do anything for money, even make Cromulent t-shirts. So thank you so much for listening. We do make shorts there on YouTube, there on TikTok, Comic Literate Podcast on both. You can send us an email, comicliteratepodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening, and good night.
Thank you, goodbye.